as soon as I start going a bit further, this current picks me up and starts to take me towards this like rocky area as well, where the waves are crashing down on. And I was like, oh no, well, this is it for me, you know? I don't want to have to be rescued. I don't want like a jet ski to have to come save me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Common Room, perhaps the number one unscripted podcast in Leeuwarden. How are you all doing today, guys? Today we're going to be discussing phobias and fears, our phobias and fears, and we also asked a few people what their opinions were. And
we did?
We did. Well, we were okay. At the swimming pool, right? And we asked, I think, we asked someone else, right?
You asked Alessio.
Yeah, was that it?
I didn't ask
I asked
anyone.
Martin on my own. Well, Martin just gets
you
a
asked
shout
a couple
out.
Of people.
Yeah, I asked a couple okay. of people. Wow. Just doing my research for this thing. But basically, sort of for our listeners to get the gist of what we're doing here is every month we're going to be picking a different topic that we're going to be talking about. And then we'll just discuss it freely, unscripted, as usual. But to start it off, I wanted to first of all, congratulate Finn for having become a board member of
the MCF.
I wanted to do it
prospective.
Yeah, prospective member. You're the treasurer, right?
I will be, hopefully, eventually. Yeah.
We're all very proud of you.
We are.
Hi. Thank you. That's really sweet, guys.
Yeah, we'll support you when we move in together. We'll be there for you. If you need us to do a little bit of accounting or something, just sneak money in our pockets.
Yes, your money has
for the money laundering fund. You know,
left together. Yeah, I mean, what's his is ours, right? So what's this uni is ours.
I have some mafia background. We can always like do some money laundering. Definitely.
For sure.
I'm sure every NCF member right now feels very confident about being in this position.
Did you guys notice the forest in front of the boars? Because I saw that there was this lady controlling the like traffic of bikes going through, and that she was forcing everyone to get off their bikes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really stupid, because there are always people going back and forth in front of our uni, like between the train station and the city center. And now she's forcing people to, or well, the government's or the Gemeente is forcing them to just get off their bikes and walk for 10 meters.
I mean, it's just a small initiative, you know. It's going to take place 5 days for 5 days.
Is it 5 days?
Yeah, I think it's a few days. They just like move in a different location every few days.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool.
No. I think the forest looks amazing. Especially like at the train station when I came back from Portugal.
Yeah, it was nice.
And I saw it. I was like, holy shit, am I like in Brazil in the Amazon rainforest or some shit? And now when I saw in front of uni, I also think it goes with the whole theme of our uni really well.
They could honestly keep it there.
Yeah, I would not care.
I would actually endorse it.
Yeah. As long as I don't have to walk every time I have to get past from one side to another.
But it's 10 meters of walking.
Yeah, but like when you're on the bike, it's... What do you mean you know Vasco?
I won't elaborate on
Explain
that.
Explain yourself,
today
please.
When we played beach football, you were like, Alessio, his teammate, Alessio, I'm not going to be the one running, so you need to do all the running. So.
But then I ran more than him. Come on.
Debatable.
Yeah, but just the talk, it's wrong. Just the fact that you said that, it's wrong, you know? It's out of place.
Yeah. Well, in the end, it was a pretty close match, and I was very happy with your
goal. Yeah, but our play style was much better than yours. We just had more class, you know?
Yeah, me and Luca won, and the last goal was a quick 1-2, and then Luca gave me a cross over Alessio and Vasco, and I just finished it first touch into the
And
goal.
It was Ronaldinho to Messi. You know the first goal that Messi scored for Barca?
Oh, same thing. Yeah, that's true.
It was exactly the same thing.
I feel like we started off really well. 3 goals in succession. And then when I missed the shot that hit like 2 corners of the goal.
Yeah, you
I
keep
still think
talking
that was a legendary
this,
shot
but,
because it was an amazing
it's not really
shot.
Working.
As soon as we missed that, all of the motivation just went out the window. Mm. As I said, I didn't want to run, and then Alessio like broke his foot or something, and we had to take a tactical break. So from then on, it was just never the same.
Mm. Okay, they are finding the excuse, but
a what?
Is that a tactical break then, or an injury break if someone breaks their foot?
Well,
that,
maybe he yeah, broke it tactically, you know?
Well, it's a tactical break.
To get a rest, just break your foot off. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea, Tim. Why don't the professional football players start adopting these strategies?
I mean, they tactically pretend to get injured and they lie around to save some time.
Unless it's like the new Neymar, except he actually breaks his bones.
Authentic Neymar.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Tim, I think you tried to actually hurt my player in purpose because we were too good. And then you impaired our team, and that's why we lost in the end.
Oh, wow. Always finding excuses.
Okay, we'll have a rematch soon.
Yeah, yes. 100%.
Now this made me feel more competitive about the cook-off, and now I really want to win.
What a segue, though.
So, are we jumping into, into the cook-off results?
But
we
give them a little background, though.
So, as we announced in the previous podcast, we wanted to do this cook-off, and I was the judge because I think I earned this position, like towards my cooking nights for like many people, I would say, in Canal Strat and also outside of it. And so the cook-off was between Vasco, Finn and Tim, and I don't know who cooked what. I have no idea. I'm just like guessing. And I assigned like grades for three different categories. So look, taste, and the consistency slash proportion of the dish. And so the first one that I received was the one that I liked the most, which was this fish.
That was the one that you liked the most?
Yes. It's the one that I liked the most. And it was the fish with like passion fruit on top, bananas, and the rice with like cucumbers. And my grades were like taste. I gave a solid 9. I gave a solid 9 to the taste. Then consistency, the only thing that I really didn't like was the rice, but other than that was pretty good. And yeah, the bananas were a bit too sweet, but overall it was really, really good. And, yeah, so for tasting, I gave 9. Consistency was like 8.5. And look, the look was really, really nice. I really, really liked it. And they gave another 8.5. Then second dish, they arrived both together and they were more or less like on the same, line, I would say, but like a step behind. And one was like, the tempeh with sweet potatoes and mango. That one was cooked by Tim 100%. Because I told him how to cook the mango like few days before. But I really appreciated the effort and it was pretty well done. Like it was a good replica. And it was like simple, but also the look was pretty nice. And then the one that I liked the least, but overall was good, was the cheese with the rice, olives, sausage, peppers. But with that dish, it was really, really good, the salad attached to it. Like, the sauce of the salad was the best. And, yeah, if I have to assign the dishes, I would say the fish was Finn's, and yours was the rice with the camembert cheese. I will explain why. Because you, Vasco, in my opinion, have the tendency of put too much stuff into whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the proportion was like a shit ton of cheese,
mm-hmm,
and then a lot of rice with many stuff, and they couldn't eat everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was more your style rather than Finn's. But yeah, tell me, guys, if this was true or not.
It's wrong.
It's wrong?
I cooked the fish.
You cooked the fish.
Let's go!
Yes, okay. I cooked the fish. Yeah. I'm genuinely impressed because from the way the cheese was cooked, I really thought it was you.
Oh my god.
But the only doubt I had, yes, it was the passion. When I saw the passion fruit, I was like, this might be Vasco because we ate passion fruit. But then at the same time, when I ate the rice and the cheese, I was like, yeah, but inside the rice, this is Vasco because he puts so much stuff inside.
Yeah.
So I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, okay, so
that was the doubt that I had, but the only remark that I had on like Finn's dish now that I know is that like proportions were wrong, like too much cheese and too little rice. But the salad was amazing.
Yeah, when he was talking about the mango salad, I was like, holy shit, that
sounds the salad really and the good. Sauce. How did you do the sauce? The sauce was really really good.
I had it from Lina actually.
Okay, because I met her Lina.
Which she made the sauce.
She told what to do with the sauce because we'd cooked before and she always makes amazing dressings. And I knew that and I had this idea of having like the salad, the mango salad. But then I was like, I want like a vinaigrette, like that is sort of like
vinaigrette,
yes. Yeah, exactly. So that it like nicely pairs with the mango. But then I both didn't have to think for it. And then I just thought, well, I'll ask Lina how she does the things. So I credit where credit is due.
Okay.
But
wow.
Just to, for the record, like the worst grade I gave was 6.5 and I've been strict. Like, because I didn't want to go like, oh, I'm not giving like 10s. And 9 was really like the maximum I would give. And but overall you all did a good job and I was really impressed and it was a fun night. And I just want, we should say thank you to Amelia because she brought up the dishes.
Absolutely.
And she had a really nice poker face. I have to say that she didn't, like, I was telling her, oh, in my opinion, this person cooked this, and, she really had a poker face.
Yeah, but about the passion fruit?
Yes.
That was actually a Portuguese recipe, from Madeira, like, where my cousin's from, and I've gone there and I've tried it. And I think I did it once before, and once, as soon as you said fruit, like that recipe
mm-hmm.
sparked to mind right away.
Okay.
And then the rice, I completely like improvised the recipe because I was just going to make normal rice. I think I was telling Finn.
Well, you borrowed mine even.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I did. Thank you guys for, you could have killed the competition right there and you didn't. So thank you very much. I just threw the cucumbers in there because I wasn't sure what vegetable to add.
The thing is like, the cucumbers were way too big compared to the... Yeah, they were
Can
too
I tell
big.
You something? It was Lee who chopped them.
Okay. That's classic Lee because she's lazy to cook, to chop stuff small.
No, but...
But...
I have to say thank you to Lee because she did help me in cutting up the things and she was like trying to mix the eggs together, you know, when you like mix eggs
to dip
the fish and the bananas
mm-hmm.
into. But she didn't know how to do them. You know how you sort of like tilt over the bowl and then you like just use your forearm muscle.
Yeah.
Well, Lee just had the bowl on the table and she put the fork vertically and was stirring it vertically. So it wasn't working at all. She was a great help.
Mm.
And I told her how to cut the cucumber as well. So I guess it's a great tip for me to improve my recipe to just make smaller slices.
And the thing that I liked were the ideas. You know, all of you had a different idea. And it was nice to see really that you put some effort in there.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really clear. And I have to say, Tim did a pretty good replica of my mango thing. And just by listening to it, you really got the point, you know?
Yeah.
You really, like, understood how to do it.
But, so you didn't even show him.
No, I didn't show him. It was just like by talking and explaining to him how to do it. But
okay,
he saw it. Like, we have to say that he saw it and he also tasted it. Because when we went to the park last week, he tasted it. So this was like the experience that he had. But
mm-hmm.
It was a pretty good job. And also the potatoes, I told him how to do them. And it was a really good replica.
Learned from the master himself.
Yes. Because I'll just say for the record... all of us included fruit because it was one of the requirements. So we didn't all cook the same meal. We could cook any meal we wanted. But the requirements from Luca were that there was supposed to be one protein, one carbohydrate, some vitamins and a fruit. So it would be like a complete meal. And when I found out, I was like, oh, I've never cooked with fruit, like a salty meal with fruit before. So I was a bit lost. But then I remembered this recipe that Luca was telling me about. And I was like, yeah, let's just get inspired from the judge himself. And so I tried that. And I think it worked out pretty well. And I'm very happy you liked it, Luca. But well, what a surprising result, because when I was giving my plate to Amelia, she was also taking Finn's plate, so she would take them up to Luka at the same time. So I saw Finn's plate and I was like, God damn, that looks so amazing. Like the cheese with the salad. And there was also like a side salad in a separate bowl. I was like, this is advanced. What did I do? Mine is so simple. Just some sweet
potatoes, you know?
Yeah, but still just some sweet potatoes and tempeh and caramelized mangoes. I was like, okay, so Finn is out of the question. So I just want to beat Vasco. And now Vasco won the whole thing.
What can I say, guys?
Wow.
I've been telling you since the start of the year that I can cook. No one believed me. The girls always trash talk my cooking. Obviously, they've always also seen the worst of my cooking, because every time I bring my plate to like Marina's room or Fena's room, I always come up with the shittiest recipes, like pasta with olives and sausages on it. And another time it was just,
I guess it's just like a matter of like putting the effort.
Exactly,
in, because
exactly.
It was really, it didn't really represented your cooking and also your personality, bro. No, but let me explain. It was really like, among all the dishes, it was really delicate, you know, in taste. And from you, I wasn't expecting that. I would expect that much more from Finn. Like, he's a more delicate person. Like, he's in his manners, in his British accent, you know? And yeah, I would just, like, figure that out much more.
I think you just haven't seen my emotional side yet.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I guess there's time to find out. But yeah, for the cook-off, any more remarks? Any more comments or...
Question. Do you like olives?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I wasn't sure. I was actually talking with Vasco about this for a second because I was like, because some people really don't like. I feel like people either really like olives or they hate them. And then I was a bit unsure with that. I mean, not that that killed my dish, but.
No, but I wouldn't have judged like something that I didn't like as negative, you know? But yeah. I basically eat everything, so. Except like Brussels sprouts.
Pickles.
I like
pickles.
Brussels sprouts.
I eat everything.
Julia made a recipe of gnocchi with Brussels sprouts once, and I tried it as well.
I don't like
and feta
Brussels
cheese.
Sprouts.
It's fucking amazing. All right, Luca, sorry. Maybe I should make the recipe for you. You might like
it. We can see. Yeah, but not with
since
the gnocchi.
Since
that
I'm
you
such
buy,
a great chef.
Not
no,
with
right?
the gnocchi that you buy at the supermarket.
Get too full of yourself.
Okay,
you
know, okay, yeah, we can make gnocchi. Well, you'll make the gnocchi. I'll just watch, and then I'll complete the recipe. But I actually have one last remark about the cook-off. So when we all went to Luca's room, I saw that my plate had been completely wiped clean. And that's when I sort of got a good feeling.
Yeah, I mean, because it was also like the first
one. It was also the first one, but I was like, I don't think Luca would have, I think you would have saved yourself for the next ones if you didn't enjoy it as much.
I saved some parts then, like, whenever I finished, before you came, I just finished the rest and whatever. Because, like, I left a bit of Finn's one because there was, like, too much cheese compared to the rest.
It was great. I tried both of yours and I really, really enjoyed them.
I wish I would have, like, tried each of your dishes. I would have loved to.
I don't think either of you even saw it.
No.
Because I didn't take a picture of it.
You didn't take a picture? Mm-hmm.
No.
We
get it. I forgot.
No, but the look was really nice. He did like the couple of like rice and the colors were really nice. Like he had like this orange color with like the passion fruit on the fish. The fish was a bit hidden, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the bananas looked nice with like some, they were soft with some cinnamon on top.
That
and
was
then,
like a last
And then
touch.
There was like green and white on the side with,
like
with the rice.
Sort of like
I have a pretty good image of all of the dishes. I paid attention to it and yeah. Also, the look was really like yours was the best.
Wow. Thank you, Luca. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use this to flex.
Congratulations.
I can say now that I have never lost a cooking challenge because I've done two. One of them wasn't very impressive. Not very competitive since I burnt my mac and cheese as well. But I guess second time around was the charm. Now we can actually get into the main content of the episode after the long-awaited cook-off.
This wasn't that? Oh, okay.
No, this was sort of touching upon the cook-off, which we
teased
in the
last episode.
Yeah,
this was just like
episode.
To warm us up and to make like, to see that we care about our followers as well. You know?
Yeah. We have delivered on what we promised.
Yeah, we delivered what we promised, yeah.
That's very true. Right. Okay, well, let's start talking about our phobias and fears. I think we were all very interested in, we picked amongst from other topics and we were sort of unsure between phobias and fears and extreme sports and adrenaline and getting out of your comfort zone, which we will probably do later on at some point. But I feel like there are a lot of tie-ins between both topics. And at the end of the day, we ended up doing a coin toss and we chose phobias and fears. So, Finn, why don't you go ahead and start off with your deepest, darkest fears?
My deepest, darkest fears. Well, speaking of phobias, we touched upon this topic when we were sort of discussing what to discuss today, yesterday already. And the first thing that came to my mind, and I'm not quite sure you can call it a phobia. I think Vasco said that it's called thalassophobia. Is the ocean. And it's a bit odd because I like very much admire the ocean. But whenever, you know, like you're standing on the beach and you sort of look on to the sea, I just find it so humbling and a bit fear-inducing to think just how much water there is. Like I could stand at the beach in northern Germany, look out and be like, well, yeah, there's thousands of kilometers of water now, and then there's America. You know, there's literally nothing between me and America right now except for water. And I always find that so, yeah, humbling in the same way maybe that some people feel when they look up to space and just notice how vast it is, and then just to know. I know it is a matter of respect, I'd say, ultimately. Also growing up, of course, I often was at the beach in northern Germany. It was a huge part of my childhood. And we also talked about that yesterday. But of course, there's also like danger to the ocean. It's not an unfounded fear, I'd say. For those who don't know, northern Germany has, I'm not sure if it's the strongest, probably one of the strongest tides in the world. So the water retracts all the way like 10 kilometers from the shore at times. And you can just walk out onto what is ocean floor usually. Wattenmeer, it's actually a UNESCO, how's that called? Like nature...
Protected area?
Protected area as well, but like heritage sort of site.
Yeah.
And yeah, there you can walk, you can get like guided tours there, because that was also the thing often played there when I was a child and so on, but it was always told, okay, don't go too far out, don't go alone, don't go when no one knows when you've gone, because the water comes back fast and you'd think, well, you'd see the water coming, and you do, but when you see it coming, you'll not be able to get out of there again. And I don't know, it was always like a very... Yeah, it's scary to think about, I guess, how much power there is in the ocean and how little then if we have like 5% of the ocean really explored as well. Like we're exploring the stars, we've been to the moon, but we don't really have a clue of what's even in the ocean. I don't know. I find that terrifying in a way, but I also admire it.
I have sort of the same thing as you, but for me, it's more of the deep ocean. But I think that's what the thalassophobia actually is. It's specifically the deep ocean. And sort of like the creatures that you imagine are roaming down there. Because if I look, I'm not necessarily afraid of waves or currents because I grew up going to the beach every day during the 2 months that we have of summer holiday. So I've gotten smacked around by the waves like all the time. And I've gone on the water with yellow flags, red flags, and of course, not trying to challenge myself or, you know, drown, but like I've done it and I understand the dangers. So not necessarily that. I feel like that's sort of just respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same for me as well. Just like Finn said, I have this respect for the ocean and the sea because, yeah, as you said, it's so unexplored and so vast and we can't do anything. Like when a huge wave comes, when the current is just too strong, you can't do anything. You just can't outpower it. And also Slovakia is, of course, a landlocked country. So I haven't had that much exposure to the sea and the currents and the waves because I usually went to the sea just during the summer holiday. And so I'm not so used to it as you, for example, Vasco. I'm more used to hills and mountains and heights. And there was this one experience that really showed me how strong the sea is in Sardinia, Santo di Stefano Island, Luca knows for sure. And there was this one day when it was super windy and the waves were quite big. And I was trying to get this inflatable thingy from my cousin that you just put on the water and then you can lie on it. But he wouldn't give it to me because he was using it. And then when I finally got it from him, I was super mad. So I was like, okay, I just want to swim as far away from the shore and just chill on my own when I finally have it. So I started swimming away. And then the wind picked up massively. And at some point, the waves were too big. So it flipped me over. And then the wind picked up and just blew the inflatable thingy away, like tens of meters away. And I was like, oh, holy shit. Okay, this is not good. So let's try to get back. So I was trying to swim back. And I'm an okay swimmer, but not a really good swimmer. So I wasn't that fast and the waves were bigger and bigger. And every time the wave came, I had to hold my breath and stay inside the wave and then go to the surface again. And then another wave would come. And then the waves were taking me sort of to the side where it wasn't a sandy beach, but legit rocks and quite sharp. And I was like, wow, if I get on the top of the wave and it just smacks me on the rocks, this is not gonna end well at all. And I was sort of starting to panic because I was like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm so weak against all of this huge amount of water and power. So I was just still trying to swim and then hold my breath when the wave came. And at the end, they got me to the rocks. And when the final wave took me on the rocks, I just tried to mitigate the fall and it like hurt me a little bit, but not that much. And then I just tried running on the rocks as fast as possible to get away from the waves. And then I just jumped over to the beach. And in the end, it ended well, but I was legit panicking. And then I was like, okay, not doing this ever again. This is not worth it.
Yeah, that sounds really scary. I actually had a sort of a similar experience when I went to Australia. I think I've told you about it. There's this beach called Bondi Beach, which even has a show called Bondi Rescue. Because
I watched it. I used to watch
great
it.
Great fucking show.
I used to watch it, yeah.
It has
yeah.
millions of subscribers on YouTube. Recommend it to all of our viewers. But like, I went to Bondi Beach, which is the famous beach, but I went on the off season, which is... I think I went sort of around Chinese New Year, which is February. So it's not summer, because summer in Australia is like December, November, sort of.
Well, also February, it's kind of summer.
Yeah, okay. It was like, yeah, it was decent temperatures, but it wasn't the season where everyone was there, because
yeah,
the beach
yeah,
was
no, okay,
relatively
it.
Empty. Whereas when they actually shoot the show, it's in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
where the beaches are full of people. And people, like so many tourists there all the time that just don't really know how to respect the ocean. And then they go too far and get in trouble. Or I don't know. They just have like a seizure or like convulsion while they're on the ocean. They need to be rescued. Stuff just happens. And what happened to me was my PE teacher, which he came with us in our family trip with his family because he was the only Portuguese person in my school in China. And he was teaching me how to surf when we were at Bondi Beach. It was just me and him. But he didn't have a surfboard and he was just like, oh yeah, just go out there, you know, sort of swim away, with paddle like away. And then whenever you see a wave, you know, just try to catch it. So
the perfect teacher.
Yeah.
Well, we also did the exercises sort of where you lay down on the sand and then you try to get yourself up, you know,
mm-hmm.
you like push yourself up.
Yeah.
And then you practice the technique of, standing on the board. So we did a few of those and then he was like, okay, just go on and try to catch one. And like the beach is known for having very strong currents as well. So I was paddling and you know, I caught a few waves or half caught because I'm not the best surfer. Definitely. I fell on my ass a few times and managed to catch one or two. And then eventually I was like, okay, let's go a bit further to catch a bigger wave. And as soon as I start going a bit further, this current picks me up and starts to take me towards this like rocky area as well, where the waves are crashing down on. And I was like, oh no, well, this is it for me, you know? I don't want to have to be rescued. I don't want like a jet ski to have to come save me. No, I just sort of managed to paddle away. You know, I'm making it much more dramatic than it needs to be because I didn't get in trouble or anything. I just saw at one point, I sort of respected the current and I was like, well, if I don't start paddling, if I didn't have my board, I probably would have hit the rocks. But because I had my board and it didn't get taken from under me, I sort of acknowledged the current and I was like, okay, let's get out of here. and then I just paddled away and proceeded to try to catch waves.
You know, but yeah, I don't know. That's why I find it more, for example, that's why I wouldn't say like I'm afraid of what's in the ocean necessarily. Like I find these forces of nature much scarier if you think about it, because like for almost the entirety of your life, you're pretty much in control. Like there's, yeah, you can get hit by a car or something, but you're always quite sure that you can handle yourself, right? And then being like exposed how weak you are, or how strong nature can be, I find that much scarier. If I like stay with the ocean example, it's just where I noticed it the most. And also as a kid, of course, like when the ocean retracts, right, it's all mud and you can go there and it's all fun. I remember as children, we were at the beach, it was my sister and a friend of hers, I think like a family friend. We were on a family trip. We had like a little beach house with family friends and everything. And we went out into the Wattenmeer, like they call it, like this muddy ocean, or used to be ocean. And we were just playing around, and we even reached at this one point, like we always, you sort of sink in if you stand in or like move slightly because it is really muddy. And we were sort of making it, oh, like you'd bury the other person a bit, you know, just to have fun. But at some point it actually came to the point where I had sunk in so far with my one leg that I couldn't get it out. Like I was in this mud and it was like up to my knee almost. And I noticed, well, at that point I couldn't get out by my own, with like just through my own strength. My sister and our family friend couldn't pull me out either. I don't know how old we were, like maybe 8 to 10, I'd say, something thereabout. And then just realizing, well, now I'm stuck, you know, in this muddy wasteland, knowing that the water will be back in like an hour, flooding above me. At the point we were standing, the water would probably be something like 10 meters deep once the water comes back.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
You're like, well, you know, it's the same thing. This is it. Guess I'm fucked. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm sitting here, right? I made it because my sister ran back to the house and like called my father, and then he came with a shovel and they like dug me out, like my legs.
Wow, they had to actually dig.
Yeah, they dug a bit away and then my father pulled me out.
Mm-hmm.
My shoe actually got stuck. We didn't get it out. Like I had these, how are they called? Like these rain boots.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of. That's what I had. And they were fully submerged by that point. And then when I went out, the way I got out with like my last leg was ultimately that I like, well, got my foot out of the boot, but the boot stayed behind. So there's now a boot buried somewhere in the North Sea. I'm sure it's not the only one. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like you're being pretty much like, once you reach this point where like, okay, I'm kind of fully out of control now and sort of need rescue, luckily not on a TV show. yeah, then you're sort of fucked. So I don't know. Like it's with many things, even if it's like winds or something, and you just realize how strong these things can be. And you never really think about it till you're in that situation, and it sort of shows how vulnerable you are. I don't know. I find that sort of scary. It's like a loss of control.
Yeah, I think our mind is not made to perceive the dangers that there are all around us all the time. Like, you're not going to walk out of the door every morning and be like, oh my God, I could die today. I could be run over by a car, because there are like a million ways that you could die. But, you know, you're not going to think about that because that's not living. But at the same time, I feel like whenever you're put in a situation like that, don't you also think that your survival instincts sort of awaken as well? Like, whenever you feel vulnerable like that and you're like, well, what choice do I have now? If no one can help me, I've got to help myself.
Well, yeah, logically, but that's sort of what I'm saying, that kicks in.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't want to die, but if you're in the situation where you're sort of at the point where, like, I'm fucked and I am fighting, and it feels like you're fighting, like, for your life, or, like, you know,
yeah,
if I don't get help now, I wouldn't be able to make it on my own. Like, I think that's the scary part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Once that instinct kicks in, but you're still unable to do anything.
But I think that's sick. Like, your survival instincts, what can you do with that? Because it sort of pushes your body overboard. I don't know if you guys have ever read or watched, like, news in America. I don't know why.
No, never watched news, mate.
I don't know why.
Totally ignorant.
It's always America. Tim and I were also talking about this the other day. Whenever it's something weird, it's always America.
Yeah.
Like, whenever there are those murder cases and stuff, always America. UFO sightings.
And Florida America. Man is a distinct category. Florida man wrestles a shark.
Yeah.
almost.
But I've just seen a few news articles in America where like mothers rescue their kids out of the car and like lift cars and stuff. It's like your survival instinct kicking in, and I think that's super sick, honestly.
Yeah, it is. It's like our natural power. But on the note of the ocean, I do have like a little different perspective, because rather than being like, obviously I have a lot of respect, but the thing that I really appreciate of the ocean, rather than have like a sort of fear, is that, I don't know, I just feel that in that moment, nature is controlling me, rather than like humans always try to control nature, especially like in a society like ours. It's like always human driven, but in that situation, I just really appreciate the fact that it's not something that I control. It's something that is controlled by nature, and it's much better, you know? I just feel it's an environment where I can feel much more free, and where I can just like really enjoy the opportunity. And yeah, that's like today we went to the swimming pool, and that feeling, you don't have it, you know? You really don't have the feeling of like the natural environment where you're like all together with like the... with the sea. And a thing that I normally do, it's like whenever I get to the beach, always like swimming, I don't know, 200-300 meters away from the beach, and just stay there, lay there, don't do anything, and just appreciate that you are like a small dot in the middle of a lot of things. And it's something that I really like. I just spend some time there thinking and enjoying, and yeah, I really like that. But as a fear, yeah, I have a big problem with roller coasters. My brothers and my family can really certify that. Mm-hmm. It's just that whenever I'm doing like a roller coaster, I just feel like something really powerful in my stomach that has to come out. And the only way to cope with that is like screaming super loud. But I don't know, just the fears just stays, and I just feel really uncomfortable. And yeah, it's just bad experiences. And whenever I can avoid roller coasters, I always do. Obviously, like some chill ones have done them, but nothing big, nothing that could really like went really fast. Maybe some like turns, some twist. These are okay, but other than that, it's too much for me.
And so, was there a concrete experience that started?
Yeah,
this
I mean, year? As we were talking about it, yeah, one time I went to this place in France, and yeah, it was in Nice, probably my brothers, they do remember. Mm. And yeah, I was like, there was like this Luna Park, which was really like cool, with like some popcorn stands, some, it was nice, but I just did this roller coaster. I remember it was like a dragon twisting and going up and down and doing some shitty turns. And I was like, when I got out of there, I was like, okay, this is the last time in my life I'm doing this. I must have been like 9 or 10, mm-hmm. something like that. And yeah, I was with my mom, and you know, my mom, she's not the bravest as well. So she was with me, and she could see that I wasn't like doing very well, but she didn't have like a mean on how to help me. So yeah, we were just
probably
both there.
Herself,
yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
She was struggling as well, and this thing didn't really help. And yeah, that was basically like the experience that shaped me into this fear. But afterwards, I went like into few places, and I also had a good time. But I just like developed really a self understanding of what I can do and what I cannot do.
Mm-hmm. And what do you guys think about roller coasters?
Well, I like the fast turny ones when you're in this long cart and you're just going super fast around the track, because those are like mainly about speed and just adrenaline. So I love the adrenaline in the episode about adrenaline sports and just adrenaline junkies and all these things. You guys will hear how much I love these activities. So those that just make your heart rate skyrocket and make you scream your lungs out, I love them so much. But those ones that, I don't know, I think the point of them is just to make you sick, because the whole thing is moving, is twisting in one direction, then you're part is twisting in the other direction, and then your individual seat is putting you upside down. Like these types of roller coasters, I hate them because they just make my stomach sick and I don't get much adrenaline, so I don't see the point. So I like one type, I dislike the other.
I think I concur. Like,
really?
I agree.
Okay, we'll be going to theme parks together, Finn.
Like, I do enjoy, like, proper roller coasters, which are actually, like... I also like these, you know, these towers that go really up and then drop.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stuff like that's fun because it is exhilarating, but it's true. It's truly... If the only purpose is to disorient you and make you feel sick, then where's the point? You know, it's not what you should be.
Yeah, I personally love theme parks and water parks, all sorts of, I guess, thrilling experiences. I'm in for that as long as it doesn't really trigger my near, I don't know, sort of fear of heights. I don't know if it's a phobia, but like, I don't know, to some extent, I think I figured over the years that I have a fear of heights, especially if I'm in an unstable place where I don't have a lot of footing or I don't have a lot of support and I just see the floor below me. It's also like the reality shock that Finn was talking about before, where you're just like, damn, I'm really fragile. Like if I was about to just step wrongly one time and fall off, you know, that's it for me. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of heights.
I had this one situation once where actually it was a bit of a stupid story. I had locked myself and my father out of our house, which was really
nice
unfortunate.
You told me this.
I think I might have. I locked us out because I left the key in the lock when I pulled the door closed, and it was one of those locks where then you can't put a key in from the other side anymore. So I effectively locked us out even though we had keys and we just couldn't get back inside. Now my father used to be a fireman, so we got a ladder, and he decided, okay, I'll just break one of our windows and go in there. He was thinking, well, which one will be least expensive, and that
don't
was
you have
the
a
one in the
thing? Or a garage that you could have gone.
Yeah, but for that we didn't like that was the same situation actually. Like in both, there were the keys from the inside because we were going out. It was really stupid situation. Like I really messed up, I'll admit. So my father decided, well, cheapest one would be the attic. So we got on like a little subroof, first, which is on the outside, and then pulled the ladder up, put it against the rest of the house. And then my father climbed up to the little attic window, which is like, not even like it's really small. And I'm still amazed that my father even fit through it. And he punched it in, opened it and climbed in through the attic, jumped down the attic, opened the door and was fine again. Was chewed out a bit personally. but then that was fine. Until 2 weeks later, I did it again. This time on my own though. And I felt naturally really embarrassed and I didn't want my parents to find out because my father nor my mother were there. So I was home alone at that time and okay, I have some time till they come back. And I knew the attic window was still broken. And I thought, well, you know, now I can just climb up there, climb in as well, and do the same thing my father did, right? So I did. I got the ladder, went onto our little roof, pulled the ladder up, put it against the next thing, and then climbed up. I actually cut open my hand because my father had put like some of this isolation wool into the window so that it doesn't get cold, super cold in the attic, and you can't just easily in. So I had to like punch it out from the outside. So it goes out, but by that time I like scraped past one of those shards that were still like sticking in the window frame and sort of cut my hand, which was really unfortunate. But okay, I got that punched out and opened the window and then wanted to climb through it. But that wasn't really easy because the ladder was sort of just ending next to it, meaning I had to sort of move in with my upper body and then dangle my legs in the air and pull myself in. Which is possible, but that was one of these moments. I like put myself there and then I look down and I don't know how high up that was. I don't know, maybe like 6-7 meters or something.
That's
right?
A lot.
Like it was like 3 meters, I'd say, till like the little roof. And then underneath that, of course, it went down to, the actual ground level. And then, yeah, I'd say maybe 6 meters. And that was scary because we were like, well, you know, be a really stupid way to go. But if I fall now, I'll at least break a leg, you know, or both, probably. And then these moments, you're really aware. I didn't. I actually managed to pull myself in, climb down. I actually opened the door exactly as my mother walked up our driveway.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she knew what happened because I had a bleeding hand. And I explained it to her, but my father, till this day, doesn't know. And luckily, he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I don't think he ever will. I surely won't tell him. But yeah, there are these moments. It ties again back into the moments where you realize, well, you know, maybe I am mortal after all. sort of the thing. And I guess roller coasters, to tie it back, are fun because you can get that thrill still sort of knowing that you're safe.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's why roller coasters don't faze me whatsoever, even though they're up high, because, you know, I trust them.
But with your slight fear of heights, have you ever gone on one of those towers that Finn talked about?
That stuff doesn't scare me.
The simulated free fall.
It makes me feel adrenaline. Mm-hmm. It scares me, but to an extent that I like it.
Mm. So you're not scared to go on the thing?
No, not at all.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like sort of like a buzz or like a adrenaline or a thrill. But no, I'm not necessarily scared of that. I would just be scared. It's like, you know, when we were at the pool, we saw a crane. Like, we saw some construction work going on near Ubo, and we were like, oh, look, there's a crane. It would be so sick to climb it. And I'm sure we've all watched videos of people climbing up cranes or like abandoned buildings. And if I climbed up a crane and then I was walking on top of a crane, I think I would be a bit like, holy shit, this is scary. Because it's something you're not really supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that, you know, shit could go wrong at any time. Also, like, do you know, there's this really famous movie where this guy tried to walk along two buildings in America. I forgot what it's called, but you know, like rope
mm-hmm.
walking?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In like really up high. And I think this is a true story. Forgive me if it isn't. But I remember watching this movie of this guy who was one of those rope walkers, or is that what they're called, guys?
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's okay.
Okay, rope walkers or whatever. And he set up the rope between two massive buildings in Washington, I think. Definitely in America. And then he just walked across with no protection equipment, like Alex
Harness. Yeah. Oh yeah,
Alex Harnold or Funnold
yeah.
from Free Solo. And I think those people are crazy. Absolutely nuts, because, you know, you're just putting yourself way too vulnerable. It's like you're asking for it, right? I just that's just way too
scary.
Yeah,
I mean, the confidence that you have and the confidence in your skill is just like huge, or you just don't care about your life. Like, these are the two options. These are like the two options. I don't see any other way out of that. You just don't care, or you just like, you know that you're really, really good and you're confident in what you're doing.
Yeah. But even with a harness, I don't know if I would do it. Skydiving is something that I really want to do, because I want to see if I have the balls when I'm up there. 3 kilometers above ground. I want to see if I have the balls. Well, to be honest, the guy who's strapped to you, he sort of asks, are you ready? Even if you say no, he just jumps. So you don't have a choice most of the times. But I would like to see how I feel at that fateful moment where I have to be like, okay, it's time to jump. And my body's telling me, no, what are you doing? You're jumping from a plane. I want to see if I could overcome that fear.
In those experiences, like, I never tried, but I think arguably, like, the problem is like the moment while you do it, and then afterwards it gets like one of the best experiences of your life.
Yeah,
probably. But before, just like the getting out of your comfort zone and jumping out of a plane, which is something that in a rational mind is just like outside of the box. That's the main thing. But once you're out, I think you have a great time, whoever is going.
But
that's what I think.
This is something that I personally also sort of want to push the idea of during this episode. I totally agree with you, Luca. Like, the experiences where you push yourself out of your comfort zone the most and you sort of overcome whatever boundaries or limits you have, or most of the times the experiences where you learn the most from, or where you grow the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I would thoroughly encourage them, and I'm pretty sure that knowing all of you, you guys would agree as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Also connected with the our natural instincts that you were mentioning and the fear of height that we were just discussing, I think it's really interesting, or at least for me when I'm climbing, because, well, I climb quite often, I do a lot of bouldering when it's not summer, where you fall from, I don't know, maybe 2 meters and you fall on a mat, but you're still falling. But that's quite okay. But then in summer when it's normal rope climbing, when you're climbing a route of maybe 30 meters high, or when you go to the big mountains like High Tatras in Slovakia and you are climbing a mountain of 200 meters high, and then you're in this height, and then that's, I don't know, it's such an interesting feeling, because even though you've climbed thousands and thousands of times on these rocks, every time when you're up there and you're getting tired and you're trying to get to the next point so you can clip your equipment in and put the rope inside so that you don't fall, when you're tired and you know that you're about to fall, even though you know that the rope is gonna catch you, you also know that you will be falling for maybe 2 or 3 meters until the rope catches you. And even though you know it's safe and you will survive and it's only 1 in a million chance that the rope will fail or the equipment will fail, your natural instincts still kick in. Like, to this day, I'm scared when I'm already tired on the route and I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to fall. But you're still just holding on because your body is screaming, man, what are you doing? Like, you're so high up, you will die if you fall, you can't fall. And so then you are stuck because you can't go up because you're too tired, but you also don't want to fall, so you're just stuck there. Your body starts shaking, you just get sweaty, and then eventually you will fall. I sometimes scream my lungs out, and then the rope catches me and I'm like, oh, nice, that was fun, let's do it again.
Like, so you've fallen and been caught by the rope?
Yeah, like every time when you do lead climbing, so you're dragging the rope with you and you have to put it into these points along the route it catches you. Yeah. When you fall, when you're doing this type of climbing, you fall like 2 or 3 meters until the rope catches you.
No, I know what you mean. I was just, you've fallen. Because I feel like I would try that, and at the point where I would fall, that would sort of be like, okay, this is it. Like, I just think it would scare me too much for me to ever repeat that. But I respect you so much for doing that. I think that's really impressive. The fact that not only you're climbing such tall walls and you're like overcoming your fears and just sort of, no, you're not relying on, you know, those like climbing walls where the ropes are already set and you have a guy who's like pulling you up and then he's like, oh yeah, you can come down, because I've done that multiple times, but that's in sort of a controlled environment, which I enjoyed and it was really nice. But I think an avid rock climber like you, no, you should totally go for it and do your own thing. So I respect that a lot, but at the same time I think you are a fool and I wish you all the best.
Thank you. But yeah, of course I've fallen countless times every time I'm climbing a bit harder route, depending on, like, considering my abilities, when it's a bit harder for me, of course I'll fall countless times until I get the movement right, and then there'll be the success try. But until then, you're falling and falling and falling and trying over and over and over. And that's the interesting thing. I don't have a fear of heights. I love climbing. I love mountains. And still, I get nervous when I'm about to fall, even though I know that the rope is about to catch me.
But how do you attach yourself? Like, how do you secure yourself to the wall?
So in the wall, in the rock, there are these drilled like steel eyes or like steel circles. And when you climb up to that, you put this piece of steel equipment, a quick draw is the name. Mm-hmm. You put it in, and then into that thing you put the rope. And so then when you fall, it creates like a lever and you just stay hanging.
So it's walls that have been climbed before, of course.
And they've put in the steel circles inside, so you can climb there safely.
Yeah, it makes me always think, like, whenever I go climbing, I'm always like, who created these holes? Because if you are the one that creates, like, the actual place where you put your rope, you are a crazy dude.
Yeah.
Like, I read many books about this Italian guy that is the first man in the history that climbed an 8,000 meter in winter. So this guy goes in winter, like in Nepal or whatever, and he just tries to climb up the 8,000 meters. And he's so sick, he created like new scale levels of like difficulty in, new grade. What's the scale of it? Like, the difficulty, there is like a scale of difficulty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just created like a new one because it was too complicated and above what everyone else did before him.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's a really interesting guy and he does a lot of stuff and they follow him on Instagram. He lost some friends of his like, in hikes and he's a really tough guy.
Well, I'm not surprised. I feel like those sort of people who take their sports so to such an extreme mm-hmm. probably only know also people who they go with who are extreme sportsmen, which is impressive as well that, you know, they're risking their lives much more than someone who's a casual.
But that's also his job, you know, like I read this book of his and he keeps says like that when he was like in middle school, he told his teacher, oh, look, I want to be a climber. And his teacher was like, yeah, it's not going to happen and whatever. He just perceived this dream that he had and he became a climber. And if you think about professional climbers that do that as a job, they're not many. And now he's like pretty famous, well known all over the world. He has like an helicopter agency that helps like people to rescue people all around like the Himalayas to rescue people in mountains. Of course, like after a certain point, helicopters cannot go anymore because there's not enough air. But until like 5,000 meter, they can. So he really helps people with this agency. And it's volunteering. And, you know, he also talks a lot about the relationship that he has with his family. Because I can imagine, you know, you just married or you're like the son or daughter of one guy like this and you say, oh, but this person has a job and has a passion, as like putting on the line his life every time. So it must be hard. And he always says that he always keeps trying. And also, if you do these hikes, you need to be like in Nepal like 3, 4, 5 months to get like the acclimatation and be ready for the air. It's not that you can climb an 8,000 meter like one day, you know. You need to stay there like at 6,000 many times, then you try 7,000 multiple times, and then you go for the last hike. And so he stays like in Nepal 4 months, and he says that even he really appreciates the fact that his son understands like the passion that he has, you know. And I think it's an important thing that even though there is like some risk in that, the people around you support you, and it's a really good thing.
You can never prepare too much for those
adventures,
because what if you don't come back, you know?
Yeah, and also, like, the weather, like, is so unpredictable there. If one day, like, the weather decides, oh, I'm gonna snow, even, I'm gonna snow really, really bad while you're there, it's just bad luck for you, you know?
Yeah.
And he's, of course, he's aware of that, and he knows everything, but you're, as we said before, you know, nature, when you are like in those mountains, is just stronger than you. So you either adapt to that and obviously the fate of you is in someone else's hands, or that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, but now that you said that about the weather and how the weather is unpredictable, do you guys know how much it costs if you want to pay for a Sherpa to take you up to Everest? It's
super fucking expensive. But now it's getting too touristic, bro. The problem is like people that don't have a clue.
Yeah,
the thing is people that don't have a clue on how to go up there, they're just like going. I've seen like a movie about this and there were like real issues. Like people died because it was just too overcrowded and people weren't prepared enough. So, yeah.
I understand the goal of wanting to do it. Like I would, it seems like a super cool thing. I don't know if I want to do it, but yeah, it's very commendable. But at the same time, yeah, come on. Not anyone can climb the Everest.
No, of course.
It's mad though that it's so touristic. If I remember correctly, one of the waypoints they navigate by is an actual corpse of a climber in an orange jacket, you know, but it's still touristic because it's like frozen, stuck there. And they think they know who it is. They're not quite sure. Because people die while doing it.
They haven't bothered to recover the body.
You can't recover the bodies of Everest.
Because it's too high.
Well, yeah, you'd have to go up and bring a body down with you. And it's already so taxing for your body to even get there. Like, some can be recovered, but... And you also can't send, like, a helicopter up because the air is too thin for a helicopter to work up there.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the main issue, you know. After, like, 5,000 meters, like, no one is coming down to pick you up. he's coming up to pick you up. That's the thing.
Yeah, you either do it then or you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sort of links back to the survival instinct. You know, when you're up there, it's just you and the mountain. You're not thinking about anyone else. You're just facing the challenge, and you're trying to sort of conquer the beast or tame the dragon and bring the victory back home. I should sing my vodka song.
Oh yeah, please.
No, I'm not gonna do that, unfortunately.
What? Will you do that in the next episode? So people have something to look forward to again.
Any promises. I'm sorry.
We'll try.
Guys, our listeners, you need to convince Vasco. It's gonna be fun.
With bongos.
With bongos.
Oh
no.
God, no! I'm not exposing my lack of skills, especially because I was the one who spent the money. It was like 10 euros to buy secondhand bongos.
Well spent.
Very well spent. 2 euros to men. I'm gonna get better. Listen, this is all the trash talk. It's like my cooking. You guys you love to hate, right?
Oh, he's coming again.
We're gonna have a bongo competition with a certified bongo master.
Know your limits.
I'm really sorry that I assigned the win to Vasco, because now he's gonna talk about it.
Yeah, guys,
well, you didn't
gonna show.
You didn't
off,
think
me.
It was him. So.
Yeah, fair.
Would that have changed your decision?
No, of course not. I wanted to be like a
good judge.
Objective.
Yeah,
objective.
You were a great judge. Thank you.
I really wanted to be objective. But should we raise the last point that it's maybe a little bit deeper, like as a fear?
Yes, yes.
Because as a last quick point, I just had like this fear of maybe failing in general. Like, it's a thing that really strikes me, and I have this tendency of giving me like really low expectation of what I do, because if the results are not as good as I expected, or even better, I can be happy about it. Like, I told many times, Tim, but in general, I always said that before coming here, I was really like, I felt really unprepared, not being able of living alone, failing all the exams and whatever, and then I just like demonstrated to myself that I was able to do that. But it's just like my constant fear of not being good enough for whatever environment I'm gonna go to, and I don't know, this whole experience is helping me out, but at the same time I still have it, but to a minor extent since I'm here. Just more confident, but yeah, before coming here, and as a kid, it was really something that created me troubles, and it sort of limited myself, because most of the time in the end I would do the stuff, but then, you know, maybe I wouldn't put the same effort in it just because I felt I wasn't good enough. And yeah, that's basically the thing, like how I experience like the fear of failure.
I think that's a really real fear that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. You know, putting yourself out there in general, I think, is just scary. And you don't know what's the outcome gonna be. So I understand sort of the urge to lower expectations or not try too hard so that you can't disappoint yourself. I totally get it.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of like the burdens of expectations, like, makes sense both when other people put them on you and you don't want to fail others for once, and you also don't want to fail yourself. I've like experienced, like, in the sense, or like the bad thing is, I think if you have high expectations of yourself, that's for one thing a good thing because you sort of push yourself. But for example, if good performances become the norm, everybody around you expects you to do well in that regard. And you at some point expect to do well as well. And I don't know, it was always then sort of the struggle that even when you were doing well, it wasn't satisfying. It was meeting expectations. You were like, okay, I managed to do this exam well, for example, or whatever. But you could basically only fail, sort of. Like, you can either, it can either be enough or you fail, but you can at some point never really, well, really enjoy good work or like an actual achievement. I felt, and like, I know it's a sort of privileged maybe way to talk about it, because it's also stupid to say, oh, it's a bad thing that things have gone well, right? Because now things have to keep going well. But on the other hand, it sort of robs the enjoyment of actual success. I think also the danger of high expectations both others can put on you and you can put for yourself.
Yeah. I can relate to that. I think family members can be quite pushy in this sometimes, that, you know, you're getting good grades and then they're used to it. And then, yeah, when you're getting more good grades, it's okay, but it's not great because you were also getting good grades before. So you're just, you know, standing up to what you were doing before. But then once you get a bad one, then it's a whole fuss because how come you got this bad grade? You can't do that. You haven't been doing this until now. What's happening? And yeah, it can cause some unnecessary stress.
Yeah, but I think, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No problem. Just another point that regarding fear of failure, I don't know, regarding like achievements and things like that, I also feel it to some extent. But I think sometimes when I have like an overthinking period, I more fear failure in the sense of like when I'm about to die and I look back at my life and I fear that I won't be satisfied with how, what decisions I had made, or if I had accomplished everything that I wanted to do, sort of all the things on my imaginary bucket list, like all the places to visit, all the things to try, all the things to learn. And then if I look back and I'll be like, oh, well, I had one shot at this life, because that's the sad reality that all of us only have one shot, and I haven't managed it as well as I wanted to. I think that's very frightening for me.
I think that's a beautiful message. Honestly. And I can also empathize with what both of you said in terms of your parents' expectations, because my parents are quite demanding or uptight, sort of. Obviously, I'm not Latino, but they sort of behave like Latinos. Like, my parents would sort of like threaten me and be like, okay, Vasco, you better be doing good in school, otherwise you're going to get the shoe or something. And it's not the shoe, it's the flip-flop, sorry. But especially with my math grades, I remember when I was in middle school, I hated maths. And there were a few times where I got D's or like 50% or 40%, like two or three scenarios. And I just remembered panicking, like getting the test result and just absolutely panicking and hiding it from my parents for a few days and just sort of enjoying these last few days of freedom. And not telling them, and like, but it always felt so weird to act normal around them when I knew, I sort of felt guilty and I knew I was hiding something for them, because I knew that once I told them, then my parents would be like, oh, you know, these aren't the grades you should be getting. We expect more from you, you know. And then back in the day when you're like 8 or 10, no TV for a week seems like the end of the world. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of always put it off. Because I didn't want to disappoint them.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, I think that not only do I relate to a fear of failure, there's also sort of a fear of starting something new and putting yourself out there in all sorts of big projects that you do. But at the same time, like I think that it's important. Also ties back to what we were saying before, like it builds character. Putting yourself out there and in uncomfortable situations, what makes you grow, what matures you as a person. Because I think if you don't go through any sort of challenging situations or through any sort of discomfort and strenuous situations, then you can't really flourish. Because, you know, like it's the saying, I think, goes like, pressure makes diamonds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be a diamond, you have to challenge yourself. And I think that's a really great ending message as well. Want to tie it to something like a YouTube channel that I usually watch. I think you watch it as well, Tim. Yes Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Their motto is literally seek discomfort. And they go out there and they put themselves out of their comfort zone. And like you get a really good feeling out of any sort of experience where you do that. Like every time you do something that's not by the book, something that you're maybe a bit nervous to do, I feel like I always take away sort of a learning, like a lesson or a learning experience, which I can be proud of or I can look back on. Mm-hmm. And smile.
That's a really beautiful ending.
Yep, really good ending.
Okay, well, thank you for tuning in for another month, and we'll see you next month with the common room. Okay, that was not a good ending. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in to another episode, and we'll see you next month.